obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
My name's Tammy and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm about to lose my voice, so I hope it'll hold out. I want to thank the committee for inviting me. What a privilege and an honor to be invited to do anything in AA. But what an honor to be asked to speak at the bikers meeting. Man! My ego's like this. Woo! I'm a wannabe biker, man. I'm telling you. But anyway, I really, Tim, thank you for everything. And at first, I was nervous that I wasn't going to wear a dress. But now that I'm with y'all, hey, I don't think y'all care a bit if I have a dress. I didn't have pantyhose, and I was going to send Tim to get some, but, you know. Yeah, that's right. Hey, I want to tell you guys that I get really nervous speaking, and it's like the least favorite thing for me to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. I just get sick to my stomach. She told me a minute ago, just calm down, you're going to be okay. I've had some experiences with speaking. The first time I ever spoke at an AA meeting, they took us out from an institution, and they took four women out. We went to this AA meeting in Wetumpka, Alabama. And I was a nervous wreck, and I started fidgeting with the podium, and I put my foot up on a shelf, and the whole thing went rolling out in the middle of the floor. And all those old-timers were looking at me like, what in the hell is she doing to our podium, you know? And after I got in AA, I'd been sober a little over a year and spoke at a group in Selma, Alabama. And I went in the bathroom to pray and put my purse on the sink, and the whole sink came off the wall. So I just pushed it back in the wall with the pipes and everything. And a few seconds later, the door banged open and water was just spewing everywhere. And I was like, Lord, what happened, you know? So, I mean, I always check out this whole get-up, you know, that we're safe. I want us to be safe. There's a few things that are really important. My sobriety date is July the 16th, 1991, and for that I am so grateful. That might not mean a lot to you, but it means a lot to me. I have a sponsor, and my home group is the Prattville Downtown Group, and it's the best group in the world. And we meet every night at 6:30, and if you're ever in Prattville, Alabama, which I don't know why you would be, but if you are, please come see us. And I was born and raised in Alabama. Did everybody hear Joe last night? Wasn't he great? Joe is not really from Alabama. He talks way too fast. We can't even understand what in the hell he's saying down there. We talk really slow. And yeah, you can hear this draw. And I always think of a time I was speaking at a convention, and one of the California speakers was ahead of me, and they had an interpreter, and they were signing, and they were trying to keep up with that California speaker, just going, going, going. And later when I spoke, I looked over, and it looked like they were doing a hula dance. So anyway, I'm here to tell you a little bit about me and what it was like for me and what happened and what it's like today. I'm being sober and it's great. I was born in Montgomery, Alabama, and my mom got pregnant when she was really young, like 17, and back in the 60s, that wasn't cool. My dad rode a Harley, had long hair. He shot pool for a living and sold a little drugs on the side. So that's the way it all started out. So I guess you could say right away, I wasn't from the Leave It to Beaver family, okay? And I used to really want to figure out what happened to make me an alcoholic, you know, psychoanalyze it. And this old-timer in our group, he used to always say, you know, it really don't matter how the jackass got in the ditch. Yeah. How you gonna get it out, you know? And I don't know. I don't know what happened. I'm sure my mama did drop me on my head when I was a baby. I have no doubt about that, you know. They were having a good time back in the 60s. So I don't know what happened. All I know is you got to get the jackass out of the ditch. Hey. So anyway, growing up, I'll tell you that I always felt different. And I hear a lot of AA speakers say that. I just didn't fit in. I never fit in with the cool kids. I didn't fit in with the jocks, you know. I didn't fit in with sports. I didn't fit in at church. I was raised Catholic. Any Catholics? It's busy. Kneel, sit, stand. Kneel, sit, stand. You know, y'all know what I'm talking about. And I could never keep up, and I stayed in trouble in church. I had one grandmother that was Southern Baptist and one grandmother that was Catholic. That right there causes a lot of confusion, you know? So I never fit in. And it was like that for me until I was 12 years old and I took my first drink of alcohol. Now, I don't remember a lot about my childhood, but I remember that first drink. Me and my best friend, we lived in the projects. We snuck out. I was 12, she was 11. And we went and got drunk on red malt duck. And I can remember, like Joe was talking about, I can't sing as good as him, but when I took that drink and that effect hit me, it was like a magical potion. And for the first time, I fit in. And I was as funny as and as pretty as, and life was great. And I'll tell you, I got in trouble the first time I drank, and I got in a lot of trouble after that. I made it home and didn't get caught, but my friend, she went home and started throwing up. And her mother came in and said, well, honey, have you been eating red candy or Kool-Aid? Now, don't forget, she's 11. And she was like, no. So her mother rushed her to the emergency room. The doctor came out laughing and said, there's nothing wrong with this kid, but she's drunk on red wine. So her mom called my mom. My mom snatched me out of bed, beat my butt, you know, put me on restriction for 10 years. I don't remember what all it was. But it really didn't matter what the consequences were because I had found a magical potion. Now, I can tell you, they talk about this line that you cross into alcoholism. I don't know much about that either, but I think I crossed it that first night because from that moment on, my whole life revolved around drinking and that next drink. Now I was 12, of course I couldn't drink every day, but if I wasn't drinking, I was thinking about it and planning it, and everything just started revolving around that next drink. You know, I started doing other things, started drinking and partying and smoking dope and, you know, skipping school, and I know this is AA, and sometimes when you say the word drugs, some of the old timers are like, and my deal is, if you were born after 1940 and you hadn't smoked a joint, where have you been, you know? But, of course, I respect the traditions. And, you know, this is my drug story, and I'm going to sum it up in one story. My Uncle Clarence was a wino, and he was a wino like we view winos. Trench coat, wine in a paper bag. Went under the bridge, lived under the bridge, got a check the first of the month. He'd come home, we'd rob him, he'd go back under the bridge. You know, that typical wino life, you know. And one night, Clarence, I've been out, and I came to that next morning. I looked at Clarence, and I said, Clarence, give me a drink of that wine. I'm about dead. And I took a big old drink of his wine, and it was hot, wild Irish rose. Yeah. And I spit it out, and I looked at Clarence with all the disgust you can imagine. I said, Clarence, you ain't nothing but a wino. And I'll never forget him looking back at me with all the disgust you can imagine and saying, well, at least I'm not an Ennio. You'll do any damn thing. Now, Clarence summed me up that night. I was an Ennio. I would, you know, drink Crown Royal or Mad Dog 2020. If we were in a bar, you handed me pills, I'd just take them. It could be X-Lax or anything, you know? I'd shoot it, smoke it, snort it. It didn't matter. Drink it. It didn't matter. And Clarence summed up my drug story, and that's it. I was an Ennio. So that's the way it was rocking. When I was 14, I quit school. When I was 15, my knight in shining armor came in. And he robbed drug stores for a living. And man, life was great. It was great. And so we gallivanted around the southeast, burglarizing drug stores, and man, life was wonderful. And the chances are when you're living like that, you're going to get caught, and we did. We got caught over in Mississippi, and he got a 40-year sentence there at Parchman. They sent me back to Alabama because I was 16. And, you know, my mom came and got me out of juvie, and I can remember this. I just started going in and out of juvenile detention. And my mom would be driving home, and she'd look over at me and say, I don't know where I went wrong. And I'd be like, I don't know where you went wrong either, but you did somewhere, you know. And the sad thing is that I didn't know any more than her that that first drink, you know, that when I drank, I just didn't act right, you know. And that's the way it all started. So going in and out, you know, I quit school in the eighth grade. Now my knight in shining armor is locked up, and I'm a daily drinker, a daily user on the streets. And I'll tell you that I did a lot of things I'm not proud of, a lot of things. And every day when these baby blues open, it was going to be, who am I going to con, rob, cheat, manipulate to get that next drink? And I did whatever it took. By the time I was 18, I had a felony and was in the big girl court. And I can remember standing in front of that judge, and he sentenced me to 10 years and suspended it and put me on 5 years probation. And he told me some things that were beyond my comprehension, like get a job, you know, go to work, go to school, do something. And I left there that day, and I don't know about you guys, but I didn't do probation well, drinking and drugging. Never reported. But about this time, my keen alcoholic mind started trying to figure out what the problem was. And I did. Montgomery, Alabama was my problem. And, you know, there's more police here than there are people. And they're always picking on me, you know. So I had this vision, this keen alcoholic mind. I'm going to go to Texas. I'm going to start over, and it's going to be great. I could see a vision, you know, me with a cowboy on a ranch sipping good whiskey. Man, that vision was great. So I hitchhiked to Texas, which would be your first clue. It wasn't going to be that great, you know. And I got to Dallas and had to go to work down on Harry Hines Boulevard. And if anybody knows Dallas, Texas, you know what I was doing down there. And, you know, I took a drink in Dallas, and there I was. You know, I got the AA, you guys said, everywhere you go, there you are. And I was like, what in the hell does that mean, you know? But today I know what it means, because I went to Dallas, I took a drink, and there I was, just roaring around Dallas. I stayed on the run for a couple years, and I don't know if any of you have ever lived on the run, but you get tired. You get real tired. And after a couple years, I came back to Alabama, and my mom paid for me to come back and got me an attorney. And I went in front of that judge, and he sentenced me to that 10 years he had suspended. And I can remember laying in that county jail, and I was scared. You know, I'm headed to the penitentiary. I got a 10-year sentence. The only thing I know about prison is what I've seen in the movies. And they're going, when I get up there, they're going to slap me down and take all my stuff. I mean, all my stuff, you know. You know the movies we've seen. And I was scared to death. And I said that old jailhouse prayer that we could probably just say together. God, if you'll get me out of this one, I swear I'll never drink again. And you know, the doors didn't bang open. And I said, see, there's no God. And if there is a God, I've been dealt a pretty bad hand here. So, you know, they sent me up to Tutwiler Prison, the only women's prison in Alabama. And, you know, the big book talks about that pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. And can we stand here and talk about it? I mean, talk about it for hours. You know, the living on the streets, panhandling, you know, waking up with people you don't know. This was one more of those experiences. Pitiful, incomprehensible. They took us to that prison, took you in the back gate, stripped you down, and sprayed you down like an animal. And for the next 2.5 years, that's just how I lived, like an animal. But here's the thing about alcoholism. After a few days, this keen alcoholic mind started kicking. I saw I might survive this deal and trying to figure out what the problem is. And I did. Drugs. Drugs are my problem. Look what they have done. Here I am in the penitentiary, 10 years. I'm through with them. When I get out, it's drinking only. And I might smoke a little weed every now and then because that's God's herb. You know how we do. Stayed in the penitentiary 2.5 years, went to a few meetings while I was there because, and you hear people say, you know, they go to meetings in prison because there's coffee and donuts. It's true. That's why I went. Don't remember anything about those meetings other than that little lady that was committed to bringing those meetings in every week. She was about this tall, and her name is Miss Margaret. Margaret Duncan, and she went on to the big meeting, and she wore red lipstick. And she talked like this, hey, sugar. And then she kissed you on the lip, on the cheeks right here, and leave that red lipstick all over your face, which isn't good when you're in prison, you know? And I asked her one time, I said, did they pay you to come up to this place, this stinking dungeon? And I'll never forget that lady told me, no, honey, I come for free and for fun. Because every one of you women are doing my time for me. I should have been here many, many times. And I've always remembered that. And she was one of my heroes in this program. She got really sick right before she passed, and they had to put her in a nursing home. And she started a meeting in the nursing home. And the last time I saw her, I spoke at her little meeting, and there was wheelchairs in a circle, and I spoke at the meeting. And man, she was one of my heroes. But anyway, so I went to these meetings, didn't hear anything, got out in 2.5 years on a early parole. Took that first drink. My mom picked me up, headed down 231 from the prison, stopped at the first convenience store because I was going to do the drinking only program, remember? Bought that first six-pack, drank that beer. It was just like a Tasmanian devil. Back at NEO, doing everything until they locked me up again. Went back this time, and somewhere in this keen alcoholic mind, I decided that I was a physician, and I was writing scripts. And every one of those prescriptions was a new felony, and so I had a bunch of them. And I went back in front of this judge, and today I know this is God doing for me because it was probably 6 or 7 felonies. And so that judge sentenced me to 10 years running consecutive with the 10 years I already had. And I went back to prison. And now I'm sitting back in the infirmary thinking, well, what went wrong with the drinking only program, you know? And this keen alcoholic mind started trying to figure it out, and I did. Hard liquor. I get crazy on tequila and hard liquor. When I get out, it's beer only. Because nobody gets drunk on beer, you know? And even Bill knew that. He put in the big book. He tried the beer only, I think. And so I said, it's beer only, and I'm through with all the other stuff. You know, it sounds so funny today, but I promise you, at that moment in time, I believed it with all my heart. I lived in that delusion. that illusion that somehow, someday, I was going to be able to drink like other people. And I believed it with all my heart. It's going to be different this time. The book talks about one more attempt and one more failure. I would sit up there for 2 years believing this with all my heart I could do it. You know, I stayed 2 years, same thing, went to a few meetings. I got out on an early parole. My mom picked me up, stopped at that same convenience store, bought a six-pack, drank a beer. It's like a Tasmanian devil till they locked me up again. My third trip back to Tutwiler. Now, some of you are like, I'm tired of going to prison. I was tired of going to prison, you know? Went back for my third trip, and luckily I didn't have a new felony. I just violated my parole. And by this time, they had the handy-dandy treatment centers and corrections. Now, in Alabama, they have entire prisons devoted to just drug and alcohol treatment. So I always tell the newcomers in Alabama, you know, if you don't get it here with these nice AA people, Department of Corrections will give you treatment, free treatment, long treatment. And you will complete it if you want to get out of the penitentiary. So when I went back this time, I know this is going to be hard to believe, but they recommended I needed drug and alcohol treatment. I was blown away by it too, you know, and I don't know what my story was going to be this time, light beer only. I mean, what else could you come up with? But they recommended that I go through treatment, and that's what you do when you get recommended for that. So I went through this six-month treatment and corrections, and proud to say that I'm alumni of that. They called it the WINGS program at Julia Tutwiler Prison. A lot of things happened to me in treatment. I had some great counselors. We had speakers that came in. AA speakers came in once a week, every Friday night. And one night, my counselor told me, said, go meet the speaker that's coming tonight. It's a young lady. Make her feel comfortable, because it is scary coming in the prison sometimes. So I go up to the front gate to meet the speaker, and it's the girl I took my first drink with. And I hadn't seen her in like 12 years. And she's just standing there grinning and smiling. Her eyes are twinkling. And she said, I'm in AA. I've been sober a year. And I thought, nobody's that damn happy about being sober a year. Come on. There must be some new drug or something she's on. It's got to be. And so she came in and she gave her story. And I always say her goofy story, because she talked about her dog Booger. And then she talked about when she got sober, she got a horse, and she named her horse Sober, because when she rode in the rodeo, she wanted to hear over the intercom, here comes Della riding sober. Well, you know, that's real cute now in AA. But when she told us 200 inmates that, we were all sitting there going, yeah, we didn't laugh. It wasn't really funny. And but let me tell you about Della. You know, she had never been to jail, and she had never been to prison. And I hear a lot of people say they don't go to jails because they've never been there. They don't have anything to carry, a message to carry. Well, I'm glad she didn't say that, because she brought the message to me. Because I took my first drink with her, and we drank alcoholically then. So if you get the opportunity to go behind the walls, go. You never know who you're going to help. You just don't know. A lot of speakers came. I'll just tell one more speaker story about when I was in there. It's 200 women in a dorm, and the speaker that night, his name is Joe S. We call him Hollywood. He's been sober about 25 years, biker there in Montgomery. So he comes in his leathers, long hair. And I thought, man, there is no way you can ride a Harley and not at least smoke dope. Come on. I just didn't think that was possible, you know. And I've had a Harley since I've been sober, and it is possible, isn't it? I hope y'all know that, right? Oh, okay. I was going to say, I'm glad I overslept for the poker run this morning. Anyway, Joe came in that night, and I asked every speaker the same question with an attitude. Just what do you do for fun? And they would start trying to tell me, well, we go to meetings. We go to conventions sometimes. We even go bowling. And we go out for ice cream. And I'm sitting back there thinking, should I just blow my brains out? Or am I ready for this AA party, right? Asked Joe that same question, Hollywood, just what do you do for fun? And I'll never forget what he said to me. He looked back there and he said, I tell you this, honey, I guarantee I'm having a hell of a lot more fun than you're having. I've never forgot him saying that to me, you know? And it's still a something I use today with newcomers. Why waste your breath, right? Trying to explain to them, we go bowling, we go for coffee. I'm scared one of them may really go blow their brains out, you know? So I say, okay, I'm going to tell you what we do for fun. I mean, this, you're going to have to hold on. I know this is going to be hard to believe, but one day, going to jail, peeing your pants, losing your kids, making your mama cry, one day all that's not going to be fun. I know it's hard to believe right now. But if you just hang on in AA, your perceptions of fun will change. And so there was some great experiences there, you know, with treatment and prison. And just a long story short, I learned a lot. I got out, and I didn't do what I learned. I didn't go to a meeting the first day. I was drunk within 48 hours. Was in my parole officer's office within, you know, 3 or 4 months. And he said, you're going back, Tammy. Now, I'll tell you right here is where God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. Meanest parole officer I'd ever had, ever. Wore a hearing aid, and he turned it up and down and up and down. And he said, you're going back, Tammy. And I said, please don't send me back to that place. I know what I should have done. I just didn't do it. And if you will give me a chance, I will call my counselor. This is God. He said, okay, I'll give you 24 hours. And he let me walk out of that parole office. And I called my counselor, and she got me in a place in Sylacauga, Alabama called Carradale. And what happened to me, and the big book talks about these spiritual experiences, this emotional rearrangement that we have to have when we hit that bottom. And I was sitting out in that field at that treatment center, and I just started crying, and I couldn't stop. And I reached out to this God.
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
And I said, please, if I can't live out here on the streets, then just help me end it all right now. Because I cannot go back to that place. That was my prayer. And I'm going to tell you, I didn't have a burning bush. But what happened to me was my mind opened up this much. And the next thought was, AA cannot be as bad as the way you're living now. That may not sound spiritual to you. But if you would have asked me the day before about AA, I would have said, man, it's just a bunch of old men. And they're too old to drink. When I get that old, I'll quit too. And anything negative that I could have said about AA, I would. And I'd never even been to AA. So yeah, was that a spiritual experience for me? It was. So what happened when I got out of that treatment center is I just did what I knew to do. I went to a meeting the first day. I started going to meetings every day. And I'll always be so grateful to you guys for loving me unconditionally. You know, I was borderline institutionalized when I got here. I was a legend in my own mind. You know, I thought I was really bad. I wore big old brogans and had a switchblade and dapped around that AA meeting. And I'd get mad at them old timers and be in the kitchen. I'll carve my initials in their bald head. Isn't that awful? Had a lot of trouble getting a sponsor. They weren't just like lined up, giving me numbers. Matter of fact, the only numbers I were given was just like from some sick guys like these guys up here, you know. That was it. That was all the numbers I was getting. But I finally did get a sponsor to take me on. Thank goodness she had some problems other than alcoholism, and I was willing. And I'll always be so grateful to her. She taught me so much about the home group and service work. And to me, there's magic in that service. You know, once you put your hands on it and start doing something in AA, something happens. And for you guys, if there's any newcomers, I promise you it happened for me. If you're in treatment, if you get out and you go to that group and you plug in and you wash coffee cups or make coffee or put a chair up, something happened to me is what happened. So, you know, the first step, and I just like to tell you my journey a little bit through the steps. I had to drink every drop I had to drink. I mean, you just heard it, you know. I just had to drink every drop. I had to run out of ways, you know. The second step to me, coming to believe in some power other than this, had a lot to do with that sponsor. I don't know about you, but when I was new, I had a problem a minute. And I'd call up my sponsor, Alice. Wah, 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 wah. Whatever the problem was that day. And she'd say, okay, meet me at the group. And I'd be like, all right, she's going to loan me the $50 or whatever it was, you know. And so we'd meet at the home group, and she would hand me the toilet scrubber and the Comet. And I'd be back there scrubbing them old nasty AA toilets thinking, does she know who I am, you know? And what's this got to do with getting sober? So to me, step two had a lot to do with coming to believe in that power of suggestion. Taking those suggestions from that sponsor, not having a clue what it really meant, you know, and the days started adding up. She suggested I go to a meeting every day. I didn't think I needed that many, but she suggested, so I did it. She suggested I pray in the morning and night. I didn't really think I believed, but she said, just do it anyway, and I did. And the day started adding up. Now, I tried that on some of the girls I sponsor today. Meet me at the group. And I hand them that toilet scrub, and they're like, I just got my nails done. I don't think so. So it don't always work, but it worked for me. Let me talk about the third step. You know, my sponsor was a big book thumper, and I'm so glad that Joe mentioned that, and that's where we worked the steps. And we did that third step together, just like the book says, and pray with her. And I didn't feel much but a little silly praying with another person. But let me tell you, once I made that decision, things started happening in my life. And I like to talk about this one story. Now, you know, I told you I quit school in the eighth grade. And I took my GED at the prison for points. And so one day I was watching my soap operas because I didn't work or anything when I got sober. And this commercial came on. And it said, adults, go back to school. And at the bottom it said, financial aid available. Now, look, I'm from the old school, so I thought, you know what? I'm going to go down there and try to con them out of some of that grant money, and then I'll pay it back later on my amends. You know what I mean? So I went down to the university there in Montgomery. Now, remember what I looked like, Rogan, Switchblade. I walk in there looking like an idiot, and I go up to this table and say, I want to see about getting some of that financial aid money. And probably had the F word in there somewhere because I couldn't say a sentence without it. So they're looking at me like in shock, and they were like, well, go to the next table. And so they did this around three or four tables. And I'm at the last table, and I told that lady, look, I just want some of that financial aid money. And she said, well, why don't you go ahead and sign up for a class, and you can go to the financial aid office next week. So I'm looking at her, and she's looking at me. She said, what about history? I said, well, I guess history's all right. I mean, you know. So I get to my car, and I'm about to cry, and I'm thinking, man, I am starting college in the morning. And I don't even have a pencil, you know. And I'm taking history. I don't even know who in the hell discovered America. You know what I mean? But here's the thing. This is the funniest thing. When I walked in my home group that night, and I said, guess what, guys? I'm starting college tomorrow. All of their eyes were like, oh, you know, college is not ready for Tammy and her switchblades yet, you know? My sponsor wouldn't even let me go to area assembly because I started fights at every business meeting at our group, you know? I mean, like, fights all up in their face, fights. So they're all in shock, but here's the thing they said, and I'm so grateful. They said, Tammy, if you keep your sobriety first, you can do anything. You know, my grandmother used to tell me, with God, all things are possible. But I couldn't hear her, but I heard a bunch of drunks. And I took that first class, and I made a C. And I thought, you think this is really possible, you know? Eighth grade dropout. And in 96, I graduated with a bachelor's degree. That's what you guys did for me. See, you're the ones that told me. With my sobriety first, anything was possible. So I kept working the steps, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about the fourth and fifth. I don't know about you, but I put that off and put it off. And, oh, I'm going to have to go to a priest because I'm a gangster and all that. You know how we are. And all that energy into putting off doing my fourth and fifth step. And I finally did it and went to my sponsor and then did the fifth step with her. And she started telling me things, and I was like, you don't need to be telling people that, you know? So we clean up nicely, don't we? And so I took my fifth step, and, you know, she told me to do just what the big book says. You know, go somewhere and get quiet and review those first five proposals and to take that sixth and seventh step. But, man, I was just so glad to have done the fourth and fifth. I just didn't feel like doing all that, you know? So I never looked back. I left her house, never went and got quiet, didn't read the big book, didn't do anything. Well, my teachers have always said there's no standing still in this program. You're either moving forward or you're moving backwards. And I believe them today. Because the result of that was I wasn't changing. You know, the result of that was at almost 2 years sobriety, I was rolling around in the AA parking lot fighting one of the AA women. Now, that don't do much for your spiritual image in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it didn't do much for my 20-year parole program I was working either when she signed a warrant on me, you know. And I don't blame her for signing a warrant. And since then, I mean, we've made amends. We don't really hang out or anything, but... So there's no standing still, and that's the truth. You know, Joe talked about the horse thief and that whole story, and that's true. And you can write down in the fourth step what a piece of garbage you are. Then you can go and tell somebody what a piece of garbage you are or were, and where's the solution in that? You know, and so when I went back through the steps, because I was at that turning point where I was either going to drink or get back in the steps. And I went back through the steps with my sponsor, and I realized that this time that there is so much power in step 6 and 7. You know, that's where I could take all that garbage and say, okay, God, if you're so powerful, here it all is. And you do and build with me. And you take away the defects that stand in my way of usefulness and service to you. Because I wasn't useful. I wasn't of any purpose. The women were scared of me at the group. They didn't even talk to me. You know, I still looked like an idiot carrying that switchblade. And so I can't take away my defects. And that's where God started really chipping away. And, you know, my group, they always kid and say they could measure my serenity level by my knife size going down, you know? And today I don't even carry a knife. And it's funny even thinking back and to even think how I was back then, you know? And God has molded me. And you guys have helped me, you know, to be a better person and a lady today. Steps 8 and 9, I don't know about you, but my war cry was always, oh, I'm mostly just hurting me. Did y'all ever say that? I ain't got that many amends. What a delusion we live in. You know, when I went through the steps and I had to go back through my life and see that I was that tornado the big book talks about, how I could think I never hurt anybody but me. You know, my mom, she stood by me through all them years. And I can remember standing in front of that judge and being so full of anger and hate. And he would be sentencing me to 10 years in the penitentiary. And I would just be looking at him with hate. And I could hear my mama crying in that courtroom. But I was only hurting me. My mom came to that prison and visited me every week. And she cried when she came, and she cried when she left. And I never shed a tear, but I was only hurting me. You know, my grandmother, I just lost her last year, and I was her only granddaughter, and she worshiped the ground I walked on. I mean, she really, really did. And I was robbing her house one day. And as sad as it is, I knocked a table, her coffee table over, and her family Bible fell. And I started picking up the little pieces of paper, and every one of them had prayers for me. Because her preacher said if she put them in her favorite verse, God would hear them. I was robbing her house. You know, we hurt people. We're like that tornado that roars. You know, I lost my grandmother last year, and she got to see AA, what it had done in my life. And, you know, I always really wanted my grandmother to understand the spiritual angle. And she was the Southern Baptist grandmother. And so when we started talking about spiritual stuff, she would always say, well, you really need to join a church. And we go through that and go through that. But I'm going to tell you, before she passed last year, I'd taken her to have a surgery, a skin cancer removed. And as they put her under the medication, and she was getting higher and higher, she started screaming, my granddaughter's in A&A. Loud. I mean loud, screaming it. I think she's the president or some of A&A. But this is what she said. And when she said it, I just started crying back there. She said, my granddaughter is a missionary for AA. For once, she put the connection. And it touched me so much. You know, when I lost her last year, it was so painful. But for once, I could come out of self, and I was able to be there for my mom. And, you know, I'm just so glad that my family has got to witness this. And I've made these amends to them. And I've got a second chance to be a good daughter, a good granddaughter. My mom, when I graduated in 96, you know, I always wanted to make her proud. But that's just something us alcoholics struggle with, isn't it? And when I walked on that graduation with that stupid cap and gown, I didn't do it for me. I did it for my mom. And I know that she was the proudest mother in there, you know. That's what you guys have gave my family. You know, I've had a chance to have a relationship. My dad's back in my life. He's not sober, but he's got a good wife that's keeping him straight, you know, and we have relationships. You guys told me things like, you know, make amends to society by getting a pardon. You know, I just do what you tell me. And so I applied for a pardon. And when I applied in Alabama, they said I needed one in Georgia, too. So I took a drink. I moved around a lot. And so today I have a pardon in both states, a full pardon in both of those states. You know, you guys taught me everything that I know about AA and about living and about air. I can promise you this. I was socially retarded when I got here. And I still am not the best. I mean, you know, I can remember when I first got out of prison, and when you'd go to eat, out to eat, I was used to eating. We had 4 to 5 minutes, and I would just like this. And some of the ladies would say, Tammy, nobody's going to take your food. You know, you taught me how to dress. And I still am not best. I had to ask Karen, Bill's wife, today, you know, how to dress. I didn't think Tim, I should be asking him all that. Lord, he would have had me up here in a Harley, a do-rag, ain't no telling. But you guys have taught me everything I know about living today. You know, after I was sober about a year, you said, Tammy, get a job. You know, maybe I was sober just a few months. You're an AA bum. And I was like, well, I'm going to school. Isn't that enough? And you said, no, get a job. So I said, well, I'm going to show them AA people. Nobody will hire me. So I'd go out to banks, corporate offices, revenue, state of Alabama revenue department, and say, have you ever been convicted of a felony? Oh, yes. Additional pages attached. Because I was going to show you AA people that I couldn't get a job. I'd never worked in my life, you know. And the state of Alabama Revenue Department hired me. Now, that tells you a lot about our revenue department, don't it? I didn't even want a job. And so I went to work at this revenue department and like 80 women and in this office. And so the big manager said, look, Tammy, we know your past. You don't have to share it with everybody. So I didn't. And these little ladies just loved me at this job. And in Alabama, the prisoners worked downtown in the state offices, and we rode the big bus every day, you know, if you had a job down there. So every afternoon when I was walking to the car with these ladies, the big old bus would come around the corner, and all the girls would be like, hey, Tammy. I just keep walking. They never asked. I never said, you know, so, hey. And so that was my first job, and I went to work with the state, and it's funny because it's really unbelievable, but I've been with the state of Alabama, not at the same job, but with the state for 16 years, and that is amazing. That is amazing. You know, after I got that pardon, you know, there's just some things that if you've never lived life, you know, like I got never been able to vote. I'd never had that right. And I can remember the first time I got to vote. And I was down there all excited. And I was like, okay, what do we do? What do we do? What do we do next? And these people are looking at me like, lady, this is not fun, you know? And where have you been with your old ass? I mean, why ain't you voting all this time? But it was such an honor to be able to vote, you know, and I was so excited. And, you know, I continue to work these steps, and steps 10, 11, you know, I think all of us alcoholics can say the biggest blessing today is that we have a God of our own understanding. And that big void that the, you know, only drugs and alcohol could touch has been filled. And you know, I know, and you guys know, that is the biggest blessing, that I have God in my life. I never thought that would be possible. And I have a relationship with God. You know, to me, that's just so amazing. I continue to work the steps, the 12th step. Just to tell you a few stories, after I got sober, I was able to take a meeting back up to that prison. And I was able to walk in there and tell those women, you don't have to live like this anymore. You know, what a blessing to be able to go back in that same prison and carry a meeting. You know, Johnny Harris used to tell a story, and he's just one of my heroes. And I used to listen to his CD when I was first sobering up. And he talked about the man that brought the meeting into him when he was in prison and how committed he was. And he was going to be there every week, no matter what. He said there was a blizzard one week, and they said, Johnny, the roads are closed. The AA man's not coming. And Johnny said, yeah, he'll be here. He believed in that man that much, his commitment. A few minutes later, said he heard the bell, and there was like a horse and a sleigh coming in, and the AA guy brought the meeting to the prison. One night, there was a tornado there in Wetumpka when I was carrying the meeting in there, and the guard had told my inmate chairperson, Tammy's not going to be here. There's a tornado that's going to hit like 5 miles. And that inmate said, yeah, Tammy will be here. And she believed in my commitment to Alcoholics Anonymous that much. And sure enough, there I come, umbrella inside out, and tornado drill. I had all the inmates in the shower area. So, hey, big book, we had a meeting. Some of them weren't real happy about it, but she believed in my commitment that much, you know. Since I've been sober and I graduated. It's just funny to me. After I left Revenue, I went to work with Family and Children's Services. I worked there for about a year, and then my counselor called me from this prison and said, look, Tammy, we got an opening. Won't you come and apply? I said, hell no. And she said, and I hate when old timers say this, won't you just do the footwork and put the results in God's hands? So I went up there and applied for the job, and they gave me the job at Tutwiler Prison as a counselor, and I went to work there at that prison. And I said, you know, God's got a sense of humor. I'm going to do a life sentence before it's over, you know? And I worked there for about 4 or 5 years, and treatment just wasn't my thing. You know, I my hat's off to people that it is, because we need counselors. It wasn't my thing. And so I just started praying, you know, God, this job is really affecting my sobriety. My whole life felt like one big glob of recovery. And so God, just this job I have now just fell in my lap, and I'm back with Family and Children's Services, and I'm a trainer. And I train social workers about substance abuse and the family dynamics. And what a blessing, you know. Sometimes I just get overwhelmed of how do you get from there to here? How do you get? I had to go outside last week at work and cry because for some reason, every now and then you have these God moments where you just get overwhelmed. Because right now, they pulled me over, and I am a computer trainer. I don't even know shit about computers. And I'm a computer trainer. And I just got so overwhelmed with how do you get from there to here. You know? It's overwhelming. I continue to work with these women, and I usually get the good ones, boy. I get the good ones. I'll tell you one story. You know, I don't have kids. And, you know, my mom used to always tell me, when you grow up and have kids, they're going to put you through everything that you put me through. Y'all heard that? I don't have kids, but sponsorship, okay? How about I'm sitting out with one of the girls I sponsor, and she's right out of prison, and now you don't know if they carry knives or guns or what. And we're sitting outside the group, and she said, if she looks at me one more time, I'm going to slit her throat. I was like, oh, my God, let's pray. Let's pray. Don't cut her. Don't cut her, you know. Love AA, man. I love it. Hey, look, let me tell you about the 12th step, though. My grandmother, and, you know, I told you she's Southern Baptist, and her and God are just like this. And she told me when you die or you pass or whatever you want to call it, there's going to be one question that you're asked by your maker. One question. And that question's going to be, how well have you served me? And if that's the question, and if I stay in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, me and God are going to be like this. because you guys gave me an opportunity to serve, to have a purpose. And for that, I thank you so much. Hey, I'm going to end with this because I don't know about y'all, but I'm about to. It may be a hot flash or it's just really hot in here. It could be either one of those right now. But I'm going to close with this prayer that's real special to me. And one of my teachers used to say it all the time in AA. And it's, God, I know I'm not what I should be. And God, I know I'm not what I could be. But thank you, God. I'm not what I used to be. Thank y'all so much for having me. Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.